Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Sunday, May 31st, and last night, the Spurs beat the Thunder in Game 7 to send them to the finals. The first game is on Wednesday, and it's going to be the Knicks against the Spurs, which means it's New York City, population 20 million, the most famous arena in basketball, with courtside seats going for $280,000 a pair against the San Antonio Spurs, a city most Americans have thought about exactly once in their lives because of the Alamo. The Knicks haven't won a championship in 53 years. The Spurs have won five since 1999, thanks to Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili. The obvious narrative that you'll probably hear talking heads talk about this week is small markets beats big market. Except that's not really what's happening here, because the NBA has a salary cap, and the salary cap exists specifically to make market size irrelevant. So if the money is equalized, and every team can spend roughly the same amount on players, why are the Spurs in their seventh finals while the Knicks spent most of the century being one of the worst teams in basketball? The answer has almost nothing to do with money, which, if you think about it, is way more interesting. Real quick on how the NBA's salary cap works, because it matters for understanding why the Knicks' incompetence is so impressive. The NBA has what's called a soft salary cap, which this year sits around $141 million. Soft means teams can exceed it through various loopholes, the biggest being bird rights, which lets you re-sign your own players even if it puts you over the cap. The real financial wall is the luxury tax, which is a separate higher threshold around $170 million, and going above that line means you're paying a penalty, roughly $1.50 to $4 in tax for every dollar you spend over it. Go way over, and it gets punitive fast. Big market teams like the Knicks can afford the luxury tax because they generate more revenue from ticket sales, local TV deals, and sponsorships. The Knicks pull in about $443 million in annual revenue, which tops the NBA, putting them about $40 million more than the Warriors. So in theory, they can outspend smaller teams by absorbing luxury tax penalties that a team like San Antonio or Memphis just couldn't stomach. And they have. Because since the luxury tax was instituted in 2002, the Knicks have been hit with the penalty 11 times. They've spent more on luxury tax than any other team in NBA history. They have also, in that same stretch, somehow had the worst overall record in the NBA. Let me just say that again because I want to make sure it lands. The team that spent the most money won the fewest games. Over 20 plus year sample size too, so that's just not bad luck. That's a system telling you that spending does not determine outcomes. And the Knicks spent two decades proving it in the most expensive way possible. The Spurs' approach during the dynasty years was almost comically boring. Pop, which is what everyone calls Greg Popovich, coached the team for 26 seasons. R.C. Buford ran the front office for most of that stretch. Peter Holt owned the team, and the three of them stayed in sync for decades, which in a league where coaches get fired every 2 years and GMs last about that long is practically unheard of. Their strategy was designed around one admission that most big market teams refuse to make. We can't attract the best free agents. Nobody is choosing San Antonio over Miami or Los Angeles for the nightlife. So instead of competing in free agency, which is the basketball equivalent of a bidding war, the Spurs invested in two things that do not require a glamorous zip code: the draft and international scouting. Tim Duncan, drafted first overall in 1997, Tony Parker, drafted 28th in 2001, who was a French point guard that most teams passed on, and Manu Ginobili, who was drafted in the second round at 57th overall in 1999. Parker and Ginobili are both Hall of Famers. The Spurs found two of the best players of their generation at picks 28 and 57, developed them in-house, and kept them for over a decade because they'd built a culture where players actually wanted to stay. Five championships in 15 years, and they stayed under or near the luxury tax for most of it. And now they're doing it again with Victor Wembanyama, a 7'3" French center they drafted first overall in 2023, who is, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, the most physically gifted basketball player who has ever lived. He's 21. He's led the Spurs to a 62-20 record this year. And their coach, Mitch Johnson, is a longtime Popovich assistant who was promoted from within. Tim Duncan hangs around the practice facility. Ginobili is there. Popovich, who suffered a stroke in 2024, is there as a president of basketball operations. One rookie described walking into the gym and seeing Duncan, Popovich, and Ginobili all in the same room and said, "That's not something you'll ever see in other organizations." The Spurs are running the same playbook they've been running for 25 years. Draft the best players available, surround them with smart role players, promote coaches from within, and build a culture so strong that it regenerates itself. If the salary cap makes spending roughly equal and market size doesn't determine championships, then what does? The honest answer is boring and nobody wants to hear it. Organizational decision making. Drafting the right players, hiring the right coaches and not firing them after two bad seasons, building a front office with a coherent philosophy and giving it time to work, and avoiding the panic moves that feel decisive in the moment and look catastrophic 3 years later. The Knicks, under James Dolan, were a masterclass in what not to do. Dolan inherited the team from his father in 1999, who was willing to spend unlimited money but had what Bloomberg described as little to no idea of how to spend it effectively. He hired Isaiah Thomas to run basketball operations, and Thomas traded away draft picks, signed players to contracts that didn't match their talent, and was eventually fired after the team's record got worse and a harassment lawsuit which was filed against him, so that definitely didn't help. The Knicks were valued at $4.6 billion, but still had the worst record in basketball. They sold out Madison Square Garden every night because it's New York, and people will pay to watch basketball regardless of the product. The business succeeded while the team failed, which may be the most honest explanation for why bad teams in big markets stay bad. There's really no financial incentive to get better when you're already the most valuable franchise in the league. The Spurs had the opposite incentive structure. In San Antonio, if you're bad, nobody shows up. There's no brand loyalty strong enough to fill an arena for a losing team in the 29th largest TV market. The Spurs had to be good to survive, so they built an organization designed to be good, and they stuck with it through decades of not being sexy or famous or even covered by ESPN every night. I'm a big Milwaukee Bucks fan, so this whole thing hits me pretty deep, because the Deer District that they built in Milwaukee would absolutely not have been possible if Giannis didn't turn out to be as good as he did. Okay, so moving on. This is the part that applies beyond basketball, and it's the part I keep coming back to. The salary cap is supposed to create parity, right? And in terms of spending, it does. Every team has roughly the same budget. But what the cap can't equalize is the quality of decisions. You can give two teams the same amount of money, and one will build a dynasty, and the other will pay luxury tax 11 times and still have the worst record in the league. The resource that matters most isn't financial. It's organizational intelligence, and there's no cap on that. So if you hear friends or people in the office start to talk about the NBA Finals, here's what you should know. The NBA Finals start on Wednesday. It's the Knicks versus the Spurs. New York versus San Antonio. The biggest market versus one of the smallest. But the salary cap makes market size mostly irrelevant for roster building. The Knicks have spent the most luxury tax this century and won the fewest games. The Spurs, on the other hand, stayed under the tax for most of their dynasty and won 5 championships. The difference is not money, it's decision making. The Spurs draft well, develop players internally, hire from within, and build a culture that sustains itself across generations of players. The Knicks spent 2 decades proving that you can be the most valuable franchise in basketball and still be the worst team, because no amount of spending fixes bad judgment. Game 1 is Wednesday in San Antonio, and courtside seats at MSG for Game 3 have apparently already gone for about $300,000, and it honestly could even go for more. So for that price, you'd better hope the basketball is worth watching. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.